BFM 89.9. My name is Daryl Ong, and this is Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. In case you missed it, over the weekend, tragedy struck in Malang, East Java, during a derby match between host Arema FC and Persebaya Surabaya, a match which the visitors eventually won, ending Arema's 23 years unbeaten home record. Disgruntled Arema fans rushed the pitch at the final whistle, causing police officers to fire tear gas in an attempt to control the situation. It's a move that caused thousands of supporters on the field to rush out of the stadium through one of the gates, leading to a stampede. At least 125 people have died in a crush, with 32 of them being young children, and hundreds more hurt in the aftermath. A tragedy that the PSSI, the Indonesian Football Association, said tarnished the face of Indonesian football. This tragedy represents one of the worst stadium disasters in the world. In the aftermath, the Indonesian government would form a fact-finding team comprising of academics, football experts and officials to probe what happened. Joining me on the line this episode to get a wider context of why and how this happened, Resty Worojunia, an Indonesian correspondent from the South China Morning Post. Welcome to the show, Resty, but really an unfortunate situation to be talking under these circumstances.
Thanks for having me on, Daryl. Yes, this is actually one of the darkest days in sports in Indonesia.
Yeah. Maybe just as a start, Resty, what were your reactions to the tragedy that unfolded over the weekend?
At first, I was shocked because this is not the first fatal incident during football matches in Indonesia, but normally the death toll was like 1 or 2%, and vandalism is also often happen during big games between arch enemies. Yeah. like this case Arema versus Persebaya Surabaya, but this time it's more than 100 people died and hundreds more injured, so it's very, very shocking to all of us.
Yeah, just give us a bit of context, Resty. You know, like you mentioned, it's a local derby, Arema FC, Persebaya, Surabaya. Arema is 23 years unbeaten at home, a record that ended last weekend. And the two clubs actually came to agreement back in 1988, right, to prohibit opposition supporters from visiting each other's home stadiums. Tell us more about the history between the rivalry between these two clubs.
Yes, so I was doing a story yesterday about the rivalry between these two clubs, because this is also part of the bigger problem in Indonesia, the violent fan culture. But Aremania, the supporters of Arema, and Bonek, the supporters of Persebaya, they're infamous for their characteristics, which are fierce and sometimes brutal. The hooliganism has been known in Indonesia for decades. So I read a research about why this happened in the first place, and it all stemmed from the negative perception between people from Surabaya against people from Malang, because these two are two biggest cities in East Java. So they have always been trying to one-up each other, including in football. So people in Surabaya thought, like people from Malang, they were erratic, they have erratic behavior, and people from Surabaya thought that people from Malang, they don't know how to conduct themselves, because they are known, the supporters of the football club were known to make chaos all over, Indonesia. So all these negative perceptions spill over onto the football pitch, and the culmination was, as we saw in last weekend, a lot of death tolls. They were not caused by clashes between two supporters, but the trigger in the first place was the supporters who invaded the pitch, because they wanted to express their disappointment to the players who were still lingering on the pitch long after the match is over, to apologize, because this was not only about like the match that can get them 3 points. This is beyond that. This is like a matter of life or death. And this is a derby. So losing against Persebaya, first time for 23 years, was like such a big blow to Arema supporters.
So definitely, you know, that sparked the clash between, you know, the police and soldiers and the fans when about 3,000 fans ran down onto the pitch, right? But Resty, there was also a past incident at the same stadium, the Kanjuruhan Stadium, back in 2018, right? That one fatality was recorded there. What can you tell us about that incident and past incidents in Indonesian football?
Yeah, and I read that you know, some fans have died due to beatings from other supporters, and also in Kanjuruhan too. But you know, aside from Arema versus Persebaya, then there's also like a big rivalry elsewhere, Persib versus Persija. Now this is the rivalry between the city of Bandung in West Java and the capital Jakarta. Now this the people from these two cities also they don't like each other. They always think like from people from Bandung think like people from Jakarta, like they're rude. They think like they're big deal, and people from Jakarta talk like people from Bandung, like they, you know, they think like they're the best. And so like all of these things like are basically also what caused like the violent fan culture in Indonesia. And yeah, like in like Persib versus Persija, for example, like there were like some fans that were beaten outside of the stadium a few years ago, and also vandalism, of course, in Jakarta and also in Bandung. Yeah, like all these things, like we heard far too often. So that's why like there are like rules that, you know, if the supporters of the visiting team, like they normally are not allowed to attend the, you know, the away matches.
It's more than a football rivalry, or you're saying it's more a rivalry in terms of societal differences in that sense, yeah. Right? On to last weekend's events. The stadium had a few thousand more people than the stadium's capacity, meant to hold 38,000 people, but 42,000 turned up. Would you say that overcapacity is one of the major factors to what happened over the weekend?
That also definitely contributed to the chaos, because and this is why like the Arema president, he has apologized to the supporters. I think like because he in a way knows that, you know, like the club also played a role in this, because they printed more tickets than the stadium could handle. But there's also like, of course, other recipes, such as why the doors were locked after the match is over. And of course, the repressive actions by the police and also some supporters who invaded the pitch in the first place, that basically triggered the police to beat them and do more repressive acts. So all of those things, like they are now under investigation. So,
Many lost their lives on the way to the hospital. Resty, what's the official death toll right now, and have all the victims been identified?
Yes, I read that literally like 5 minutes ago that the number has risen to 131. It was revised down from 133. This is based on the data of the victims that got printed outside of the post-mortem center at the hospital where the victims, where the dead bodies are being identified now. And so some bodies are still yet to be unidentified. So the police have called for families who, you know, whose family members went missing to check the center and see like if it's somebody that they know. So I expect that like the death toll will rise more than 131. So yeah,
in the coming days, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think the catalyst of, you know, basically what sparked the whole thing was the police and tear gas, right? FIFA regulations forbid the use of tear gas by pitch side stewards and the police. However, the regulations merely serves as guideline, right? Is the use of tear gas a common occurrence in Indonesia?
During massive protests, yes. So that's why to a lot of Indonesians, it's not shocking to see that the police was so quick to resort to tear gas to disperse the crowd. And the sports analyst that I talked to said that maybe the police did not have the proper standard operating procedure on how to dismiss the crowd properly during football matches. So they used the standard operating procedure that they used to disperse the crowd during massive protests, which is by using tear gas. Mm. But yeah, and also like during football matches, of course, like they use that sometimes outside of the stadium and also inside the stadium, but not that often, which we can say like it's rare. But yeah, the scene from last weekend, like it was shocking partly because they fired tear gas multiple times at the supporters who invaded the pitch and to the supporters who were just waiting to get out, who were still at the tribune.
Mm.
So that's also, you know, one of the things that they are going to investigate.
Mm. So in a way, it is education and the lack of training in with the police. I mean, experts have said that expose systematic problems with the police force.
Yeah, I think like there's a missing link between FIFA and the PSSI, the country's football association,
mm-hmm.
and the clubs, and also the stadium operators. They need to sit together and to think of solution to prevent this problem, because this is not the first time that supporters invaded the pitch during football matches in Indonesia or after the match is over in Indonesia. So the stadium security must be improved. And now people say that we are still at the stage where they pointed fingers at each other, like, you know, oh, is this police fault? This is stadium fault? This is the club's fault? But to find a solution, then I think like they need to all sit down together, talk with FIFA, and FIFA should also be involved, of course, you know, just so everybody's clear on what the procedure will be and what the proper security is inside the stadium to prevent pitch invaders in the next future.
Even before the game, Rusty, the police have requested for the derby, the match, to be brought forward to the afternoon due to security reasons. This was denied by league officials and match organisers. Would you say that, in a way, the police and the authorities saw this coming?
Yeah, one of the reasons why they wanted to hold the match in the afternoon instead of in the evening was because they anticipate the derby to somewhat turn wrong, because people in Malang and people in Surabaya, they've been talking about this derby for weeks before the actual match. And again, like, this is a matter of like pride, this is a matter of life and death. Like, this is also what normally happen, like during Persib versus Persija matches, for example. Yeah, so one of the reasons why they were given the green light to hold the match in the evening was because Persebaya supporters were not allowed into the stadium. So they thought like, okay, everything, because all of them were like Arema supporters, so they would not do something inside the stadium.
Mm.
But yeah, as we see, like it's not a guarantee for you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, it turned the other way. But Rusty, I want to talk. You touched a little bit on the stadium. I want to talk about the infrastructure of the stadium. Now, I read reports that there was only one exit, one gate that was open for that 42,000 people at the stadium.
Yeah, and I saw like on Twitter, like several videos that went viral showed that they were actually flocking inside this, and I saw a woman collapsing and one very, very young child being carried by his father, and people were trying to climb out the door. So it's very shocking to see like the scene, like everybody was basically trying to seek for safety after the tear gas was fired to the tribune there.
Yeah, I mean, I read some fans had even had to take refuge in the changing and locker rooms.
Yeah, and players saw seven or dead bodies inside, outside of the changing room, and some of them are underage children.
Oh, wow. Rusty, I want to talk a bit about hooliganism now. It's rife and part and parcel of not just Indonesian football, but football in the region, right? Southeast Asia. I mean, in Indonesia, some group of fans even travel to games with armored vehicles, right? How big of a problem is this, and how has this affected the footballing culture of Indonesia?
Yeah, I think like this is something that has been very deeply rooted in Indonesia, especially, you know, Indonesia and Malaysia, we have rivalry too, on the badminton field and also on the football pitch. So during the matches here, like everybody would get together and just see the match with their families or with the other, you know, with their fellow supporters, especially when they support the same football clubs. So it's very like of course the supporters here, like, they're very zealous, and this also often led to aggressiveness. And we have heard about this from the late 1980s. Yeah, so it was not shocking, like, when Indonesia lost, for example, in SEA Games, also in Asian Games, especially when it's against Malaysia, and also, you know, it's the police would normally, like, deploy personnels, especially when they play in Jakarta, then, yeah, it's the police typically boost their number of personnel to secure, like, the event.
Is there a stigma in the society in Indonesia, like, are stadiums a dangerous place for children especially?
Yeah, I mean, I have, like, a friend here, he's British, he lives in Bali, and he saw Bali United match for the first time, and he told me that that will be, like, the last time he would ever come and see match, live match in Indonesia, because, you know, like, he could tell right away that the after the match, like, it wouldn't be safe for him to stay longer. And then, like, of course, he compared it with the English football scene. It's nothing like it. Like, he said, like, there's a lot of masculinity involved. People were ready to, people aged between 16 to 25 years old. Like, that's the majority of the supporters at that match, Bali United match particularly. So, you know, and they're ready to basically throw hand, like, when they lost. So, and then after the match was over, I don't remember if the club was winning or losing, but then they threw things onto the pitch. So it's very telling, like, you know, like, they're ready to show, like, the, you know, their fanaticism right after the match was over. Like, it's, and it wasn't even making the news, like, you know, I'm like, in maybe, like, in Western Europe, like, those things will make the news, but in Indonesia, like, it's very normal that it doesn't make the news. Like, when something happened like this, when one or two supporters died, people will talk about it, like, for 1 or 2 days, and then after that, it's forgotten. So that's why, like, criticism also came for PSSI, the Football Association, that they have let these things go on for far too long without, like, actually doing something serious about it. Now, like, we'll see, like,
yeah. I want to talk a bit about the relationship between the police and security officials and the football fans, who have been at odds for the longest time. The use of excessive force is a common occurrence. What can you tell us about the relationship between these two parties?
It's very... the police is one of the most hated institutions in Indonesia, if I could say safely, because... not only that they are very repressive when it comes to dispersing the crowd during peaceful protests, massive protests, but they were also known to be one of the most corrupted institutions in Indonesia. Like, there's a lot of anecdotes. Like, if you come to Indonesia and then you got fined by the police on the street, then you can just pay under the table and then the problem will go away. And that also spilled over onto the football pitch, where many supporters, you know, whenever they see, like, the police, and then they will, like, warn each other. Yeah, but that also doesn't stop, like, vandalism. That also doesn't stop, like, the rate of hooliganism in Indonesia. So it's just, like, you know, instead of making the supporters feel safe, then they will just, like, be, you know, very cautious. And then they, you know, when they wanted to, like, vandalize something, then they would do it, like, outside of the sight of the police. So, like, it doesn't, you know, if it increased presence of personnel in a stadium, like, it will mean nothing, like, if, you know, if the supporters were, like, trying to, like, carry out vandalism in the first place. And also, there's not that much police, like, outside of the stadium, so that's also one of the criticism.
Right, it's a pretty hostile relationship that both these parties have.
Yeah.
In the aftermath of what happened over the weekend, President Jokowi ordered suspension of the league and for an evaluation of improvement of security procedures. However, Resti, how's the feeling on the ground amongst Indonesian fans?
This is definitely, like, one of the darkest days in the sports history in Indonesia. Like, we have never seen nothing like this, even for football supporters who are, you know, familiar with the sight of violence, with the sight of vandalism after a football match. Like, this is something that is unusual. So that's why like they created like this hashtag sepakat damai, which means like they agree to be peaceful, to be peace, like, you know, to be friendly towards each other after this incident. So that's quite telling, just like how big the rivalries are between football club supporters here. But on the ground, like in the football world, they agree that like this is not the time to hold match. This is the time to hold the perpetrators that are, you know, accountable for this incident. They demand transparency from the police. They demand the joint independent fact-finding team to work properly and not to involve the police during the investigation, because we cannot have the police investigate themselves. Mm. What if they clear themselves of wrongdoing? Because that is totally unacceptable.
Let's talk now about that joint independent fact-finding investigation. What can you tell us about this, and how long does this usually take?
So the Chief Minister for Security, Politic and Legal Affairs, Mahfud MD, has said that they hope to deliver a finding within 2 or 3 weeks, with the main goal is to find the culprits. And the team consists of former chairman of several sports bodies, and none of them is the police. So, and also like also a journalist and also academics. So they are hoping to like deliver results soon, because this is what everybody's been waiting for. But the police also has demoted the Malang district police chief. And also they investigate 20 others, you know, especially those that were equipped with tear gas launchers during the match. So they understand how big of a stake, you know, that they face during this investigation. Like, they cannot do wrong, especially when President Joko Widodo has said themselves that they will basically find the people who are responsible for this and hold them accountable. Yeah.
Would the PSSI be part of the investigation as well?
Yes, because PSSI, like, you know, is the Counter Football Association, so of course.
Yeah. This comes at a pretty unfortunate time, because the Under-20 World Cup is scheduled to be held in Indonesia next year. Do you have any news of whether that still happen?
Yeah, this is what's on everybody's mind right now. But FIFA has said that this is like the tragedy beyond, you know, comprehension. So I think like everybody in the football world is ready if Indonesia is being punished for that. And they also said that this is not only the responsibility of the city of Malang, this is not only the responsibility of Arema, this is, you know, Indonesia's responsibility. Like, we, like, and they also pointed to other tragedies, such as in Hillsborough, where England was being punished at the time. So, you know, I think like if we're being punished and they cancel the Under-20 World Cup in Indonesia next year, then I think like everybody will understand.
Rusty, last question. Would this unfortunate tragedy bring about a total revamp and changes to crowd control protocols in stadiums? As you know, this is not the first time it's happened, right, in Indonesia?
Yeah, everybody hopes so. And I really hope so too, because again, this is like something that is shocking even to those who are familiar with the sight of violence in the stadium. And just the fact that many children died, then also quite telling that a lot of people, like especially those who support Arema, have said that, you know, this may change my perception about the security of the stadium. You know, I may not want to come back. I may not want to bring, you know, my children, or you know, my sister, or, you know. So this is actually what people demand, like just a crowd control inside a stadium, and, you know, just for everybody to be less violent, including the supporters, including the police. And yes, definitely the police is now being tasked to revamp their standard operating procedure. And they also investigate the use of tear gas inside the stadium. So everybody hopes so, yeah.
Many thanks, Resty Woro Yunia, Indonesian correspondent from the South China Morning Post, as today we've been dissecting the Kanjuruhan Stadium tragedy that happened over the weekend. And with that, we've come to the end of this week's episode of Bar None. If you'd like to check out the podcast for today's show, it'll be up on our website, www.bfm.my/Bar None. And do share us your thoughts on what happened last weekend. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. My name's Daryl Ong, and this has been Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world, only here on BFM 89.9, the business station.